Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia. Points north, south, east, and west, like Maryland and Virginia. This is B. Mitch and Finley. His name's Brian Mitchell. He's wearing all red. Are you in straight-up Caps Game 5 mode, B?
I like red, but yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He likes red, and it's Caps Game 5 mode.
Got my hat on, my Ovi hat. Yeah, I'm ready to go.
All right, we got to have a conversation, because normally there's five of us. The Fab Five, they call it. The Crab Five, perhaps. Me, Brian, Lamphill, Jeff, and White Brian.
Yeah.
Traffic was ungodly today. I don't know. The Hauser, what's Lanvill? You said there were protesters. I saw multiple accidents. There were fire trucks on Rock Creek Parkway. There was an accident on South Capitol with a hot pink Mercedes SUV. I don't know what the hell happened there. I don't know who spends the money to get a hot pink Mercedes SUV either, but, you know, different strokes, I guess. How was your ride in, B?
I got in about the same time I normally do. Oh. I mean, I was at Chantilly's Target this morning at, I left out of the, I was checking out, it was about 8:45, and when Lanphill texted me, would I be here by 10, I was going in the parking, in the garage. So, I mean, I did see more traffic on Independence coming in, but, and then I could look over right past the memorial, and I could see on 395, it wasn't moving much.
Lanphill, how was your ride in?
It was horrible. It took me like 45 minutes to go about a mile.
Doug, from on the toll road or where did you get jammed up?
The on-ramp to get on 395.
Just at like here?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Traffic and weather on the 8th, baby. We're doing our thing here. I just told Valdez and Cakes, don't go anywhere. You're not going to move. Shout out to Jeff.
Going opposite way they may move.
I'm telling you, the immediate downtown of South Capitol and Rock Creek and everything, nobody's going anywhere anytime fast. I saw Jeffrey trying to get a parking spot. When that black Audi started to back into that spot, you seemed to have you seemed to feel a certain type of way about that, Jeff.
Nah.
I saw some honking.
No, it wasn't me honking.
Oh.
The thing is, someone was riding my bumper, so when they tried to back up, they're beeping at me, and I'm like, yo, back up. And then the Camaro is just trying to be so, I don't know what he was doing. Like, he wasn't going nowhere. It was a stop sign right there. And he's trying to drive around both of us, and I'm like, yo, what are you doing?
You live the closest. You live in the district. It's important to point out where people live all of a sudden. How was your ride in?
Man, it was crazy, man. It's so much construction going on. It was a bunch of fire trucks going everywhere.
What was up with all the fire trucks? What were the protesters? What are we protesting?
I don't know about the protests.
But, I got a feeling and an opinion on what should happen with the people that disrupt everyone else's lives.
One of the metro stations caught on fire.
Protesters, peaceful. Yo, I think that's where White Brian is. White Brian.
He say it's train not moving.
I think Cleveland Park caught on fire. conveniently a place I used to live, right here in the district. I think Cleveland, that's what White Bryant said, the Cleveland Park Metro Station had a fire, so then Metro is going to be an S show. Just a heck of a morning. You two played golf yesterday. How was that?
Jeff, I'll let you talk.
Hold on. B. Mitch asked me, how many pars do you think Jeff's going to get today? You were playing at Haynes.
Uh-huh.
Now, you didn't play the hardest course. You
played the
medium course.
Yeah, yeah.
I said zero. Did Jeff have any pars?
No. He had some double pars.
Double pars. Not great.
I came close, and then it just all fell apart.
What did you shoot?
I ripped the card up.
He shot 50-something.
You played 9?
Yeah.
50, how many?
He was like 24 over. So that's like 60.
Okay.
60. No. It's 58 because it's a par 34.
All right. Well, you're learning. Oh, hold on. I'm going to try to be honest here. Like, you're trying to learn golf. It's a really hard sport to learn.
Yes.
And you're going to have some days where you shoot a buck 12. Like, it's going to happen. So this is me being kind.
Yeah, I know when y'all said it was going to be bad, my shot just felt all discombobulated. I kept trying to hurry up and do my things like that I learned, like, you know, how far the club should be and line all that up without getting. We had a dude walking behind us.
He was way behind us, though, Jeff. You had to worry about him.
I thought he was going to catch up.
Did I ever tell you to pick up?
No, but I just kept seeing
it. If JP played with me, if I don't tell you to push it, you're not being pushed.
Was he a single?
Yes.
Here's what you need to know. You'll learn these things. Singles have no rights on a golf course. There's two of you. There's one of him. He's going to win. And that's
okay.
And
we were behind 3.
Yeah, that's the way. The game is the game. Speaking of the game being the game, obviously there's a lot going on with RFK Stadium. And there's opposition. Right? And I think all parties knew that was going to be the case. For me, I can't get past a few different things. One is that the Harris Group is putting up almost $3 billion.
Yeah.
That's one. Two, none of this is possible without the Harris Group. And if you don't think they had to spend a lot of money with lobbyists and interest groups to get this deal from the feds, let's all try to remind ourselves. I think it was just before New Year's. It was just before the new Senate. It was a absolute last minute, bipartisan, 100-0 vote to return the RFK site to the district so they could build a stadium.
Uh-huh.
The bill is literally called DC Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Stadium Campus Revitalization Act.
But listen, Jay, I'm gonna say this. Okay, you have a different position in a lot of ways when you speak. But I speak my mind. A lot of people are going to throw stuff out there and try to put themselves in a certain position. But let's be damn real. They gave them that permission to have ownership to build the stadium.
Correct.
Let's just go there. So all of this other mumbo jumbo, listen, I know most of the politicians, they want to get their pockets lined. People outside of them, they must be their friends, or they want to get their pockets lined too. But let's be real. This place has sat there for all these years, and nobody really cared. Now, all of a sudden, when somebody else can go and get the ball rolling, get the damn snowball rolling down the hill, everybody else want to talk about what they could have done. Why you haven't walked the halls? Why you haven't figured it out? Why did it take Roger Goodell, Josh Harris, and crew, and lobbyists to walk those halls to get 100 senators when we know for damn sure 100 senators never agree upon one thing. And the fact that they agreed upon this lets you know what they're trying to position. Now, people want to just point out the stadium. I don't care who you are. One finger salute to you because it's not just about a stadium.
Agreed.
It's about multiple things around it. And we always talk about, well, there's taxpayer dollar. The city is going to have to put some money for infrastructure no matter what the hell is built around there. But I don't believe if they don't go there and talk to those people on Capitol Hill, nothing happens.
No.
I believe that.
I also.
So all the writers and all of the damn politicians that want to now grandstand, you weren't doing, I almost said the wrong word, you weren't doing crap before that. Let's be real about it. And I'll be honest with you. I go to stadiums when I'm not working. Most people only go to the stadium when they're working.
Like, you'll be at the Caps game tonight in the seats.
Sitting there having food. Yeah. Right. I'm not going just to work. I go to games and stuff to enjoy it. I go to other things to enjoy. I travel to D.C. because, you know what? It is the nation's capital. And a lot of times, and I've been having fun in D.C. since April of 1990. Since
Republic Garden.
I promise you, I probably spent more money in D.C. than a lot of people that live in D.C.
I won't ignore that my name got dropped in the post this morning. It's kind of interesting to me, B. Whenever I break news, they have a hard time remembering my name to credit it. Mm-hmm. But I was in there today, and that's cool. I do live in Maryland. I'm not going to hide from that. I'm also not going to hide from my support for this deal because I think it's the absolute best thing for the city. I would point out that when Ted Leonsis and Governor Youngkin had their press conference in Alexandria about moving the Caps and the Wiz to Alexandria, I don't want to speak on behalf of the other shows, but I think I remember the Junks supported it and Grant and Danny supported it, and it was you and I that sat here and we're like, no way, please don't do this. It's going to gut the city. Mm-hmm. The city needs that anchor in the middle of town.
And a lot of people outside of those shows were supporting it.
Right.
No, they were worried that they were going to leave, you know, and they didn't point nobody out when they were trying to say, no, keep it here. They didn't point you out and say, well, look at J.V. Philly, right, who lives outside the city supporting this thing.
Right. And I will add that it there were times that got a little awkward for me because I do have a employment agreement with Monumental. And like, I was speaking my mind then, just like I'm speaking it now. And I think we sit here in the Navy Yard. We are three blocks from Nats Park.
Yeah.
This entire area happened because they put that baseball stadium in there. And the city paid for all of that. I recognize a number of factors. I recognize the city is kind of screwed in a lot of ways because look at how much money the Bills and the Titans are getting for their stadiums. And you know what they're able to draw on? Multiple buckets, right? They get the city, the county, and the state. D.C., unfortunately, because of bureaucracy centuries old, is its own little district that is hemmed
and
in by
two. And then they're controlled by people that don't really give them money.
Right.
They tell them how they can spend their money.
Right. Dude, like I think Mayor Bowser might have one of the most politically difficult jobs in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that the council, the D.C. council, has an obligation to their constituents to try to get the best deal.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge anyone trying to get the best deal. I'm just not convinced you're going to get a better deal. We'll see.
Let's be
odds
real,
are they'll get to the finish line one way or another.
The people that makes D.C.'s life hard are the same people that gave them the permission to go out there and do something with this property. And they basically gave them permission with a kind of a hunch towards a certain area about how they're going to make their money. Am I right?
Yeah.
So if the people that control you having ownership are the people that gave you permission and they put a little elbow to the stadium side, everybody out there, don't be mad at people that have an opinion. Have a problem with the people that controls it and put it out there. Because none of us, you, me, anybody else, don't care where the hell you live, have no control over this. But the people sitting up there at that damn Capitol, they got a lot of control over it. And I think they gave control and gave the ownership and the permission to do so with a little hunch of this is what we want as well.
I don't disagree. I do not take away, I am not dismissive of people, like, if your stance, the councilwoman, I believe, Ward 1, Nadine,
yeah,
who says, I don't want money, public money going to stadiums, period. Okay. I don't agree with you, but I can understand your stance, right? I can understand some politicians.
Hey, Michigan gave some public money. I think that's where she's from.
Yeah. I think I can understand others that want a better deal. They're concerned about the parking or the skate park or farmers markets. I mean,
they already said skate park not going anywhere.
Right.
Those fields aren't going anywhere.
I just, to me, build something huge that will be world renowned is good for everybody. It takes money to make
money. And it would do what? It would make money for the city.
Dude, just like Nats Park, if the city was arguing, just when was that? 6-8 months ago? That maybe last year? That Caps and Wiz were going to move to Virginia, and I believe they had unanimous support in the council. If it wasn't unanimous, forgive me. Somebody will let me know, I'm sure. But the council very aggressively wanted to keep the Caps and the Wizards because sports arenas bring money into the city. How is that? How is that different now? And if you want to say, listen, I think they're going to have 20 to 30 major events. That's what a Commanders team official told me. They're going to have a ton more of other stuff.
But can I break it down for you real quick? And I want people to understand this. One basketball game, one hockey game, comes nowhere close to one football game. So maybe two of those basketball games and two of those football games may equal what a football game presents and what they make. I think it's more than that. I think it's about 5 to 6 games. So when you try to throw out the number 81 compared to 30, if you have 10 games, you're basically talking about 50 to 60 of those other games.
Sure.
When you add the possibility of the Super Bowl, Olympics, multiple concerts, if Beyonce rolled in here, Taylor Swift rolled in here in that stadium, it's way more than any damn basketball game. I mean, it may be a quarter of their damn season, to be honest with you. So I love when people throw numbers out without any context. Okay, I'm a football player, but I got a damn deep-ass mind, okay? Don't throw out 30 and 80 and think I'm going to stay there. Because if one place makes about $15 million and then the other place makes $1.5 million, I'm kicking that ass, right?
Yeah.
So tell me the numbers. Add them up. Tell me the people that roll in and spend money in that area. Add all of it up, and then you tell me about the numbers. And I promise you, they don't want to see those numbers.
I'm with you, Brian.
The people that throw out that 30 and 80, I can give a damn about 30 and 80. I also know people will be around it all the time. You have 60-something thousand people spending money in your area at one time instead of 15, 20,000.
Totally. And for multiple days, right? Like, so I want to be clear, though. Like, I hear people's concerns. And if you live in that immediate area and you see this giant plot of land that could be developed, maybe you want to be sure. We've all heard about the skate park's importance. Keep the skate park. You want grocery stores. You want nice restaurants. You want places you can take your kids, good parks. The way I understand this, they're going to do all that. So but where's, like...
The thing for me, Jay...
They're going to do all of that.
I have been over there... In that area, the fields that RFK has called. I've been there for events that Events DC does. I also helped hosted another event there myself. And I can tell you one thing. While I'm over there in all those nice fields and I look over, I see an eyesore. And I ain't seen nothing happen. They've been tearing it down for how many years?
Right.
But I haven't seen nobody rush to get that eyesore gone. But now all of a sudden there's someone who's trying to make it better. With the stuff that's already there. And listen, man, I understand. You might not want this, that, and the other coming in. But you know what? One thing we've learned in this country, all of us, we say it's a democratic process, right?
Yep.
So if 60% says yes and 40% say no, we got to deal with it. And everything is not going to be perfect. But a lot of people that live outside the city also spend a lot of money in the city, too.
Sure.
So let's stop acting like if you don't live in the city, you do nothing.
I just circle back to this. I mean, RFK has been shuttered now. I mean, hell, DC United was the last tenant there. Audi Field seems like it's been open close to 10 years, 5, 10 years. I don't know. It's literally rotting. It's, I don't know. What would you say the distance is? Be 3 miles east?
What?
Actual RFK from the United States Capitol. About 3 miles? 2.5?
If that.
Yeah. The U.S. Senate gave the city permission. I'm reading from the bill. The district, this act transfers the administration of the Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Stadium campus from the National Park Service to the District of Columbia. The district, after the transfer, may develop and use and permit the development and use of the campus for the following purposes. The first bullet point be stadium purposes. The first bullet point.
But see,
now it doesn't mandate it has to be. But if you want to play a game with these people, you're going to lose.
You know what happens,
you're going to lose that game.
All right, that's the thing about it. I think most people that hear that and when it's presented by a lot of people that don't want to do it, they don't tell the constituents that's what the bill states. They don't say that. Because you know what? If I could keep that away from the people, now I can sit up here and act like I'm doing something different. But the people that gave you permission, people still have probably have a say in it still.
Yeah.
They said, first bullet point, stadium.
Mark Seagraves told us yesterday that D.C. budgets do have to get sent through the House and the Senate. And they almost always get approved. It's very rarely a big deal. Something tells me this one might get a snag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, if somewhere there's a line between grandstanding and actually wanting to get something done, if there are politicians in D.C., councilors, that want to get a better deal for their constituents, I understand that, and I could support that. I don't know that there is a better deal. Something tells me that generally what gets announced and what gets finished and passed, there will be some changes. I think that's inevitable. But I also think the cost of everything is really high. Go to the grocery store. Yeah. Like the numbers sound astronomical, but when's the last time you tried to take your family out to dinner and you're like, holy bleep, this was $120? Like, the cost of everything is through the roof.
I don't know where you're going, Eve. I know. I take my family out. It's $120 for just the appetizers.
Well, I got little kids. They're getting chicken tenders, but I hear you.
Yeah. Chicken tenders cost like a steak used to cost.
No. Like, the cost of everything is through the roof. I'm not diminishing the detractors, right? But the grandstanding, some of this is just obviously flawed. I'll leave it at that. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Excited to get to the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome in Robert Mays from The Athletic Football Show. You can follow him at Robert Mays, M-A-Y-S. Robert, thanks for joining us, dude. How are you?
Happy to do it. How you guys doing post-draft?
Doing good, man.
We're good, man. I mean, we can start right there. What do you think of the Commanders class?
It's an interesting way of going about it. You know, I'm sure a lot of Washington fans are sitting there itching about the lack of pass rusher, and I would totally understand that, but you look at the roster, and I appreciate how intentional they've been about trying to remake the line, because you look at what they did last year, and I truly think that what Cliff Kingsbury and Bobby Johnson did with that group last year was maybe the most impressive unit-specific coaching job in the NFL in 2024. The ability to lift that group the way that they did with, you know, chips, you know, formations, just so many different nuances and details was really impressive, but you don't want to have to live that way. And so them really going out and saying, we're going to improve this group, we're going to create competition in this group, it's an interesting way of approaching it, and I do appreciate that. And then going and getting Trey Amos, it's like, yeah, if you look at the roster right now, or pre-draft, you can make an argument that edge rusher was a bigger need than corner, but you look at that deal they brought Igbinoghi back on, and that's a depth deal. You know, I think that they played him last year in the nickel because they had to, and now you give yourself a chance to move Mikey Sainer still back inside. You really kind of complete that group in a way that is going to make your pass rush better potentially. When you only have so many picks, there are only so many directions you can go, and they've been aggressive in adding players via trade. So I understand the process and where they landed, even if I'm sure fans are a little bit uneasy about some of it.
I think when I watch all the moves they made this offseason, my mindset was that they're going to go in this draft and get best player available because they're not stressed or forced to have to do anything. You know, yes, I understand the pass rusher, but if you don't go there, then you need to solidify your offense, make that even better. I mean, for years, that was Kansas City. Extremely good offense. Their defense was okay. Now their defense is very good. And if they fall off, they can still do some things. But you don't always have to just go and grab somebody just because people think you need that.
I agree with that. And if you look at just NFL history over the last decade or so, we've got a lot of information and a lot of statistics that tell you offense is more consistent from year to year. If I were building a team from scratch, I think in a vacuum, I would want the best offense I could have in any given season, and then you hope you can manufacture something on defense. And the Chiefs are a great example. Like, no one is better at manufacturing pressure, disguise, confusion than Steve Spagnuolo is. And I think that Washington, you look at what they did last year when they had to lean into some of the more funky blitz looks and trying to manufacture pressure, they can do that. So if I were having to put my resources and kind of have it slanted one side of the ball or the other, I'd rather be great on offense with an incredible young quarterback and say, you know what, we can figure it out. We can get hot on defense. That's our best path to get where we want to go.
And you know what helps you also when you got an extremely great offense? the rules of football today help the offense more than it does the defense.
There's no doubt about that.
It's interesting, too. We're talking with our friend Robert Mays here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can give him a follow at Robert Mays, M-A-Y-S. Check out his podcast. You know, when we have these conversations, it's also like I think a lot of the Commanders fans that are really upset about them not getting a edge rusher in the draft is in the fourth round, they took a receiver out of Virginia Tech with a ton of speed, right? There were four edge rushers in the six picks right before they went. I think they probably would have taken one of those four had they been there. And the real impact of a fourth-round edge rusher in a draft where guys are staying longer and longer in college football is probably about the same as some dude they're going to sign in free agency anyway.
That's exactly what I would say. I think it's a great point, JP. You look at the hit rate and the impact that guys in that range of the draft are making, and I don't think that's where you're going to fill that need.
At least in year one.
Again, yeah, in year one, and all, but also just, you know, I look at the Bears. I live in Chicago, and it's the team I follow the most. And they traded back into the 2024 draft to go get Austin Booker from Kansas. They drafted him in the fourth round. And you know, he didn't really do much as a rookie, and maybe he does something in year two. But guys like that, like the Max Crosbys of the world, are the exceptions that prove the rule. For the most part, you're not going to get players at that position specifically at that range of the draft. And the other thing that I think complicates it for them is you look at the edge class in free agency this year, and there just wasn't a lot. There weren't a lot of players to be had. I mean, you can count them on one hand. It was like Josh Sweat, Dio Odangbo, Khalil Mack, and you run out of them very quickly. You know, we can talk about how smart it is to allocate all of those resources and whatever it is, $17, $18 million against the cap to Debo Samuel at this stage in his career, but there were not a lot of available edges you would have wanted to pay this spring, combined with the draft falling in a way that didn't necessarily present them with a lot of obvious options.
One team I wanted to ask you about was the Giants. I think they had a really strong draft. We'll see if Jackson Dart is the guy or not. But I like Carter. I like Scadaboo. I like a lot of the moves they made. What do you think about Big Blue trying to rebuild this thing kind of on the fly?
I think they came away from this draft about as well as they could have if you were going to approach it this way. If you knew going in, we need to take a swing for a quarterback, and we're not going to be able to get Cam Ward, which they tried to do, and every other quarterback in this class is not worth drafting in the top 10. So why not get the blue chip player and then wait to see if you can maneuver back into the first round for the quarterback? And the price they paid to move back up for Jackson Dart, I think that has to be mentioned in discussing how they navigated this draft, because to give up two third-round picks and come away with your quarterback as part of that by going back into the first round, that's a really reasonable price to give up. Darius Alexander, the guy they drafted in the third round, defensive tackle, he is, I think, a necessary piece next to somebody like Dexter Lawrence, because everyone was talking about this pass rush and all the guys that they have now. And every time someone would say that, I would be like, go look at their defensive tackle depth chart. Go look at their defensive tackle depth chart. Those groups need to be waves of players, and you can't have that one defined weak link, and they did. And so addressing that, I think, was great. Scadaboo in the fourth round makes perfect sense, you know, to pair him with Tyrone Tracy. But here's the thing about all of this. We can talk about how well they did in this draft and how it looks. If Jackson Dart doesn't work out, the rest doesn't matter, especially for this coaching staff and this regime. So I think that's part of why I'm not so gung-ho about it, is that I have reservations about Jackson Dart. And if that doesn't work out, then it really renders a lot of the other stuff moot if you're Brian Daboll and Joe Shane.
I totally agree. And, dude, to me, obviously a lot of things happened with Shador, right? I think it sucks that he landed in Cleveland, because I think Cleveland will mess it all up. But I just – for them to go with Dart there, to me, is the – B-Mitch and I always joked that I called the NFL is a self-preservation league. Because once guys get in, they never want to get out. And once you get a top job, you never want to put yourself in a position to lose it. And I feel like Daboll or Shane or both of them, some mixture of it's like, we can't go with Shador because the Deion threat is going to loom way too large.
Yeah.
And I just, like, what is Jackson Dart's comp? Daniel Jones? Maybe less athletic? Like, what is, I kind of like him as a prospect, but it just seemed like such a
stretch.
Just a move to protect their own jobs.
I think that's fair. I think the biggest difference, if you're drafting Jaxson Dart versus Shedeur Sanders, the thing that jumped out when I was watching Shedeur Sanders in college and studying the tape is that anytime he was in trouble, he does not have the requisite athleticism to get himself out of trouble.
Yeah.
And if you look around the league right now, that is almost like a prerequisite for being a competent NFL quarterback. To me, a perfect example of this is Brock Purdy. Like, you watch Brock Purdy play, and the first thing that comes to mind about Brock Purdy is not athleticism. He's not an overwhelming athlete, but he is very much quick enough and explosive enough, if you look at that 10-yard split number, et cetera, to get himself out of trouble when the pocket starts collapsing. Shedeur doesn't have that. And I just think, especially as a young quarterback in the league, when you can't win with your brain immediately because you're not advanced enough, you need a certain baseline level of athleticism to get yourself out of trouble. And that's what would have worried me about him the most. And he compounds that with the way that he drifts in the pocket and kind of puts himself in trouble. With Jaxson Dart, there are a lot of elements of his game that would give me pause. Like, I had a really constructive conversation at the combine with a play-calling head coach about what he looks for in quarterbacks and how sometimes the best answer a quarterback can give you when you're talking to them about a certain play, and you ask, why did you do that? And it's a good throw, and it's away from defenders, and he says, you know what, I don't know. Because that's a sign that they can feel where defenders are and where space is within an offense. If you go watch Jaxson Dart, the physical characteristics of his game, you can talk yourself into it. He's a decent athlete, he's got a decent stroke, but you watch some of those throws where he has no feel for where defenders are in space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is magnified by the fact that that offense is really spoon-fed to the quarterback. So with Jaxson Dart specifically, what you're betting on in the back half of the first round are the individual traits that he has that are maybe a little bit better than some of the other quarterbacks in this class, and you're hoping the feel stuff can come around as you introduce a more nuanced version of football to him over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Robert, we got to let you go, brother, but I appreciate it. Maybe we can follow up with you as mini camps get going.
Absolutely. I'll be around. Good
okay,
brother. You guys.
Thank you, man.
Robert Mays. Make sure you give him a follow at Robert Mays. Check out his podcast, The Athletic Football Show. Does a really good job. He's a dude that can go in depth and just talk ball, and I always appreciate it.
I like it.
Coming up at 11, our guy, Mr. Neil Greenberg. B. Mitch Finley and Jacob Dylan. I meant to tell White Brian something. I started to watch that Bob Dylan movie on the plane to California. And I was in charge of the six-year-old at the time, so I only watched like a half hour. But we all gave you a bunch of grief about going to that movie with your wife. It was kind of good, first half hour anyway. Mm-hmm. He took down like Joan Baez. There was a lot going on, but it was kind of entertaining. Now, perhaps more germane to the Sports Talk program. RAS scores. RAS measures athleticism in players, football players. Commanders, Football Insights just put out team RAS scores. They average out all the players drafted. Commanders tops in the league for best athletes drafted in this draft.
Really?
Yo, Samus Reyes is one of the best-looking athletes I've ever seen. He couldn't play football.
Yep.
Being an athlete doesn't guarantee success, but it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, but I think when you have the production that a lot of these guys had, along with that athleticism, proves that they're not Samus Reyes. He was a guy that they thought they were finding.
Right, right, right.
And he had
just kind of making it.
Yeah, but he had nothing to go with his stuff. I think when you look
here's a better example. Antonio Gandy-Golden was an off-the-charts athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Retired. Didn't have it in him.
Yeah, some people don't have it.
Right.
But I look at Connolly, and I go to Amos. I think we've seen them play. Go down to Virginia Tech with Lane. The kid, Witchcomb, got to be more consistent tackling. The linebacker from UCLA.
UCLA, yeah.
And then the running back, he got screwed by the NCAA, but when he got his chances,
he's been good.
He got something with him.
He
got to coach, and then again, he's got to coach it up.
Right.
Get it out of him.
I think
this coaching staff has done that.
For me, Adam Peters clearly has a type. Mm-hmm. He likes athletes. And I think that, like, if I had to have a driving force, now, I think you can see in the type of people they draft
mm-hmm.
that the person really matters. But if I had to have, if I'm deciding between two people and I like them both, and one of them's a way better athlete, I'm going that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
So of these rankings from Football Insights, Commanders are at the top. Just behind them, the Vikings. You could almost say the Vikings and the Washington is tied. They're both at like a, it's like a minuscule. I tweeted out this graphic and put it on my Facebook if anybody wants to check it out. Three of the top four spots, though, B, are the NFC East. Washington 1, Giants 3, Eagles 4.
Glad you didn't say Cowboys.
Guess where the Dallas Cowboys landed?
Last.
Dead last.
Because they pick people that Jerry liked, not people that really can play.
Dead last by like a significant. Look at this. Look how far down
that's
and over.
Bad. Yeah. That's bad,
dog. That gives me great pleasure. Sue me. Now, B, I don't want to lose sight of mentioning this. I saw this live last night. I was watching some hoops last night. Oh, dude, we got a little bit of breaking news here. I don't think this is enough, frankly. The NFL just announced they have fined. So the kid that prank called Shedeur Sanders and some of these other guys, his father's a defensive coordinator for the Falcons. He was the interim coach for the Jets. Jeff Ulbrich is.
Yeah, he should be fine.
The NFL fined the Falcons $250K.
Yeah.
And they fined specifically Ulbrich $100,000.
Oh, yeah, I think it's good because let's be real, man. He has a private number. And when you get that, you are held to a certain standard. You can't just let your kid get it. And for me, the fact that his kid did it and what his kid did tells me daddy was at home talking and did not protect that information. So he should have got fined $100,000, probably more. Because, like, if you go through life and you meet people's kids, you can basically listen to the kid and find out what the hell the parents are talking about at home. And that right there shows me what his dad was talking about and how his dad was acting. So it gave him, you know, the feeling that he had the authority to go do something like that.
I think you might be right, B. You know, I don't know.
You can dislike people. You can do what you want to do, especially at that time. That time is so life-changing for people.
Yeah, man. People
you don't want to play games like that.
People that want to be dismissive of it as, oh, it's just a prank call. Why are you taking it so seriously?
No.
That kid is national.
Yeah.
Now, did he bring some of it on himself? Yeah. Like, it's a complicated thing. But the prank call was unnecessary.
They don't care because it was Shedeur. If it was somebody else, they would give a damn.
What about Tyler Warren, who's a guy that I've met and really liked, and he's a Virginia native, and, like, everybody thinks he's going to be the first tight end off the board, and he doesn't go there. And then they prank call him and say, oh, we're taking you. And it turned out to be BS.
Uh-huh.
That is mean-spirited.
It is. And it should be. The thing about it is people that like to just let stuff like that go, they're the same people that if somebody they don't like get injured or murdered, then they don't give a damn.
I think Connerly was on with Grant and Danny yesterday and said he got pranked. Like, the NFL's got to
lock
this up. My question
is, if the NFL is going to be getting people's numbers to call them, they should not be allowing people to get that information. Now, if it's one of your boys or somebody that knew your number doing it, you when you see him, whip his ass.
Right.
Put hands on him.
I think the NFL has discovered they have a problem with this list that goes out. So maybe, I mean, honestly, why does the D coordinator even have everybody's phone number?
Yeah,
dudes that make that call is the coach or the GM.
But why does the D coordinator have the quarterback from another team's number?
Because they send out a giant list of everybody's. So everybody
should be sent to
every draft pick has to get.
Only the GM should have that.
Every draft pick has to provide a phone number that they can absolutely be accessed on during draft weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a lot of these dudes, it's probably not a big deal. If you're a projected fifth rounder out of South Dakota State, there's probably not that many people tracking down your phone number.
They get pranked.
But for a lot of these people, their number is a hot commodity. And I just think, yo, NFL, let's lock up that list. GMs only. Head coaches only. And I think this should be a wake-up call, and I hope it is. Nobody go anywhere. Neil Greenberg joins us next.